Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, March 17th, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt.
So a case in the Radnor School District where a student allegedly used AI to generate sexualized images of classmates has become a flashpoint in a much bigger national conversation about how non-consensual sexual imagery has evolved from crude Photoshop edits and fringe message boards into a faster, cheaper, easier to use, scalable form of harassment powered by artificial intelligence. These cases are no longer limited to celebrities or public figures. They're happening to teenagers, classmates, coworkers, and everyday people. And even though the images are fake, the harm to the victims, very real. Damage to reputation, mental health, and a person's sense of safety. And the law is still evolving. There's lots of gaps. So today on Studio 2, we're going to talk about what the law can and cannot do if a deep fake nude of you or someone you love appears online, why women and girls are disproportionately targeted, and what responsibility tech companies should bear when their tools make this abuse easier to create and a lot harder to stop. And of course, we want to hear from you, our listeners, who should be held responsible for AI sexual harassment? Should it be tech companies, the person using the technology, parents, if that person is a child, and or should it be someone else? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you can leave your comments in the chat. And if you or someone you know has been a target of a deepfake, we'd especially love to hear from you. Again, 888-477-9499.
Again, that's studio2@whyy.org. Pick up that phone and call 888-477-9499. First, a trio of local news stories.
Oh, yes.
Let's go down to South Philly. Major news this morning announced by Governor Josh Shapiro at the former refinery site in South Philadelphia. One of the facility's new tenants will be a Bill Gates-backed company that uses uranium-enriched material in an attempt to treat cancer. What a sentence that is. Oh, my goodness. The company is called Terra Power Isotopes. The basic scientific concept here is that you attach radioactive material to antibodies, which are then designed to target cancer cells. It's almost like a biologically precise form of radiation therapy, in theory. Terra Power Isotopes, this company, says it's going to build a $450 million facility at what is now called the Bellwether District. Back in the day, this was the site of a refinery in South Philadelphia that closed after a major explosion in 2019. Mm-hmm. Surely you remember that.
I remember that.
It was
a very scary incident.
So since then, there's been this long effort to redevelop the site as sort of a blend of a life sciences and manufacturing logistics hub. And TerraPower, this Bill Gates-backed company, is the second announced tenant. The first was a canned beverage company that's opening a manufacturing facility, I believe, in 2027.
Yeah, so interesting. It's nice that something good will come out of that tragic incident. It was a scary time, and I remember hundreds of people lost their jobs. And now with this new development, this company is going to bring around 225 new jobs. And got to mention that Terra Power is the third significant life sciences development announced in Pennsylvania this year by Governor Josh Shapiro. Eli Lilly is building a $3.5 billion pharmaceutical plant in the Lehigh Valley, and Johnson & Johnson is building a $1 billion cell therapy plant in Monco. So this little area, I know Lehigh is a little bit farther, but that's becoming a little cluster.
For sure.
Yeah, of life sciences.
So. Well, they're trying to make it, so like I said, a hub and try to attract more by building, and they're not just building on their own. They're incentivizing this building with some of your tax money, by the way. Terra Power is getting a $10 million grant from the state government. And that entire Bellwether District down in South Philly, the former refinery site, is a special, what they call Keystone Economic Development Zone, which means a lot of the businesses there will not pay taxes, many taxes, until 2043.
Right. Yeah, nice little tax break there. Second story. Discount retailer Burlington had an amazing 2025, and the CEO says it's because of the company's response to tariffs that they saw this big financial bump. Very interesting story in the Philadelphia Inquirer about South Jersey-based Burlington, formerly known as the Burlington Coat Factory.
They dropped the Coat Factory,
They dropped Coat Factory. The CEO, Michael O'Sullivan, says when tariffs went into effect, they reduced inventory, they raised prices on certain items, and aggressively cut expenses. And the result is a 21% increase in income and a 9% boost in sales last year. And they expect more growth in 2026, especially this spring once people get their tax refunds. Everybody goes shopping, I guess, once they get those refunds. And the 54-year-old retailer, they're expanding their store count. In 2023, they had 1,000 stores, and then they took over the old Bed Bath & Beyond locations when that chain went into bankruptcy. And as of January,
so the Beyond was Burlington.
And now they have more than 1,200 locations. They're doing more. They're experimenting with smaller stores. And this is at a time when many retailers are going out of business because of online shopping. You're seeing discount stores like Burlington, like Ross Dress for Less and TJ Maxx, all, you know, making pretty good bucks.
Hashtag budget season.
Yeah.
Did you know, by the way, for the longest time, I thought Burlington was named after Burlington, Vermont, but it's Burlington, New Jersey.
Yeah,
Burlington. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. I kind of
Okay, well, I don't know why. I just defaulted to Vermont. I feel terrible about that.
No, when I was a kid, that's where we got our coats.
At the Coat Factory, baby.
At the Coat, you grow out your coat, outgrow your coat. Oh, yeah. Your mom take you over to Burlington Coat Factory, you get a new coat
absolutely,
for school.
Absolutely, absolutely. I am curious why they dropped the Coat Factory. That's a different story for a different day. I also am curious about what the CEO means when he says aggressively cut expenses.
Yeah, I wonder what that
means. Have you been to a Burlington recently?
I have. I went there, I don't know, for
what? What was the experience like?
It was less, the line was crazy. I went around Christmas. And the line was insane. And it was like two people working behind the register. And so that was, it was like 60 people.
I went to one recently, I won't say which one, and it looked like the shelves were stocked by someone who was in a gigantic hurry. That's all I'll say. So, look, they're, maybe the trade-off's clearly working for them if there was a trade-off.
It was 60 people online.
If there was a trade-off. And maybe people, they're willing to have that experience for the exchange of the lower prices. So I'm not criticizing it. I was
you got to go like on a day when you can't go during rush season. And I did attribute that to Christmas shopping because I was last minute. Yeah. You know, looking for a Christmas ugly sweater or something. And I was just, I just left. I was like, it's too many
people. You
didn't
get the sweater.
No, because it was too many people online. I couldn't do it.
I had that experience at a TJ Maxx, interestingly.
Yeah.
Where I was looking for something. I'd only wanted like one thing. And the line was so crazy. It was also around Christmas.
Yeah.
Now, but this is anecdata here, so let's not go too.
Oh, Sullivan, y'all need to hire more people to work the cash register.
They're aggressively cutting expenses. Or not. We don't really
know. But he's like 21% increase of revenue.
Hard to
We're
argue
doing
with that.
Good.
Hard
so,
to argue
yeah.
with that. So finally, on this St. Patrick's Day, let us remember what has to be one of the longest running consumer boycotts in Philadelphia history.
Okay.
McGillan's Old Ale House, a historic bar in Center City. They have lots of beers there on tap, but they do not have Guinness.
Hmm.
The reason dates back to 2000 when about a dozen Irish bars in Philly decided to boycott Guinness. They were mad at Guinness because the brewer invested in a business that went around the globe building these kind of prefab, faux authentic Irish pubs, including a Philly location of the pub Fado, which is located very close to McGillan's. So these pubs were like, hey, Guinness, you're bankrolling our competition. We're taking you off the menu.
Take that.
And 26 years later, McGillan's is still boycotting. Now, Philly Voice did the legwork here. They went around to see if anyone else was still holding the grudge, and they found that a bunch of the boycotting bars have since closed. One, at least, has started serving Guinness again. So as far as we know, McGillan's is the final holdout of the Philadelphia Guinness boycott of 2000. Congratulations
and happy St. Patrick's Day. By the way, I will say this. I do not believe in stereotypes, but what is the saying? If you're Irish, you forget everything but your grudges.
Is that a real
saying?
That
is a real saying.
I've never heard that before.
And this kind of fits the bill, but I mean, I'm not mad at the fact that they were 10 toes down on this.
They did their thing.
You know, 26 years ago, they said no Guinness. 26 years later, they still know Guinness.
And by the way,
and they never ever going back.
And by the way, they're not just silently boycotting. Every year they post on social media reminding everybody that they are still boycotting Guinness and you cannot get Guinness. Do you like Guinness, by the way?
I'm not a big beer person. It's kind of a heavy beer for me.
I'm not a huge beer person either. I have to admit, if I was going to drink beer, it would probably be something like a Guinness, because mm-hmm. it's not very bubbly.
Yeah, no.
And I don't like carbonation.
Yeah. Well, then, you know what?
But you're not. I find it to be spicy.
Well, you won't be getting Guinness at McGillin's. Okay. Yeah.
But they do have, they have a beer that's a very similar. Like, yeah. So you could still get, you don't need to have Guinness to have a Guinness style ale.
So every St. Patrick's Day, Guinness is like, and we still, I mean, McGillin's is like, and we still not bringing you in Guinness.
Yeah. Respect. A lot of respect to McGillin's.
I love it. Yeah.
So transferring now to our topic for the show, we're going to be talking about the increasing prevalence of AI-enabled sexual harassment. We want to hear your thoughts. Stay tuned. This is Studio 2.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. A case out of the Radnor School District is stirring up debate over allegations that a student used AI to generate nude images of classmates. Now the community is grappling with who should be held accountable and what the rules should be moving forward.
And this case raises broader questions as rapid advancements in technology are redefining what sexual harassment means in the age of AI.
So how do we deal with this? What needs to change in the law? And what can you do to keep yourself and your family safe? We have two great guests with us for the hour. We have Amanda Lewandowski-Tepsky, a law professor and founding director of the Intellectual Property and Information Policy Clinic at Georgetown University. Amanda, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks so much for having me.
We also have Samantha Cole, a journalist and co-founder at 404 Media. Samantha, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
And we'd love to hear from you out there in the audience. Who do you think should be held accountable for AI sexual harassment? Email studio2 at whyy.org. You can call 888-477-9499. If you're streaming on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
And before we get into what happened at in Radnor and some of these legal issues, you know, Samantha, I wanted to start with you because I don't think people really have an understanding of how big of an issue this is, because a lot of us sort of remember when people used to have Photoshop, they have a body, they paste a face on top. But these AI, you know, images have changed. How wide in scale is this and how easy is it for folks to use this technology?
Yeah, so I would say just to answer your second question first, it's incredibly easy. It's something that people do using apps at this point. It's something that middle schoolers and high schoolers are doing, like we're going to talk about today. Kids can do it. Adults do it all the time with apps and also just using more high-powered computing processes and algorithms. But it's progressed so wildly in the last, I guess, 7 years now since this first became an issue. Where you can just download an app from the App Store or from Google Play and have it right at your fingertips. Just take one picture, put it in the app. It gives you a non-consensual generated image.
Yeah. And then so how big of an issue is it becoming? Are you seeing millions of images sort of generating? And how big of a deal is this harassment becoming?
Yeah, it's a harder question to answer how big the scale is, because I think the answer is it's much bigger than we even realize. I think that especially when it's happening with kids and in schools like this, it gets brushed off as like, oh, that's kids being kids, that's boys being boys, especially is something you'll hear a lot on this topic. And just to give you kind of a sense of scale, the biggest deepfake porn platform that was devoted to teaching people how to make these images and commissioning them for other people was like hundreds of thousands of images on that site every day, just people requesting them, making them of normal people, of everyday people, of celebrities, of people they saw at the gym or at work. You know, it's just a huge issue at this point. It's only gotten bigger.
Wow.
I want to try to walk through this to understand it all, Samantha. So you say these apps, they're available, Google Play, App Store, they're just no dark web involved. You just go to a normal place, you download the app, and that's as easy as it is?
Yeah, and they're tricky because you don't see a lot of the features that are really harmful until you pay to subscribe to the app. So if you're a parent, you're looking at this app, you're like, oh, my son wants to put himself in a Marvel movie. That seems fine. But once you get past that subscription gate, then a lot of the time it will let you put pictures of real people into sexually explicit situations, undress them. It's tough to kind of see past that subscription gate sometimes, but that is what's happening. And these ads are being advertised by the ad developers as, AI can never say no. You don't need consent to use AI to put a woman in this position. It's something that they very much know is happening, but they keep advertising as a perk of the app to
So
create these
all
advertisements
you
on it.
need to engage in this type of harassment would be to download the app, I guess pay the subscription fee, and then have some image of the person you're attempting to sort of like digitally alter. That, and then you give the app the command and it'll do it.
Yep, you can take an image from social media, from Instagram, Facebook, wherever. This is something we saw happening with Grok on Twitter, or I guess X now, where people were taking images of women from other places on social media or just replying to them on X and saying, make me this an image of this woman in a clear tape bikini, undress her for me, and it does it right there in the app. So it's there's no dark web happening here. It's all right in front of everybody's face.
And Amanda Tepsky, I want to follow up with you. Cherry talked about how this is different than like Photoshop or some older technologies. In terms of the product that's produced, how does it look different than what something like Photoshop would have produced?
It's a great question. I would say, in the hands of a Photoshop artist, they may be able to do a really impressive job doing sort of an analog deepfake. But I think that for a lot of these images, especially in the last 5 years, 6 years, they've become very high quality. If you aren't looking closely or you don't know what to look for, it can be almost indistinguishable from an authentic nude image. There were a number of tells early on in this process, particularly as it was transferring from sort of high-skill dark web work into app-based generation. But some of those tells, like multiple weird fingers, strange angles, some of that has been smoothed out and kind of improved in a gross way to make it less obvious.
Yeah. And so I want to remind our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Who do you think should be held accountable for AI sexual harassment? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on YouTube or Facebook, keep those comments coming in the chat. And so, Samantha, I wanted to just sort of this whole show idea came from what's happening or what happened in Radnor School District, where you had a student or students sort of generate deep fake sexualized images of their classmates. And this started a whole community conversation, a lot of stir around the young women, young girls who were victimized here. Can you kind of lay out for us what happened and what has been the real rub? Because it doesn't seem like there's been proof that anything actually occurred, but something definitely happened. Could you explain it to us, Samantha?
Sure. Yeah. So as and I'll try to do the story justice. This is just as I'm understanding it as someone who's not located in the district. But there were images passed around in early December that were AI generated that a boy, and this is all according to the folks who were affected, but the images were generated by AI. They showed these girls in sexually explicit situations. There were, claims that it was being created by an app that this one particular freshman boy downloaded. And then the next day, the girl, it was, rumors, teenagers talk, and it spread really quickly, especially about something like this. Rumors happen, and these images got back to the girls. The girls then had to go to school the next day, show up at 8 a.m., walk into class, everyone's looking at them. Very stressful situation for, a ninth, we're talking about ninth graders here. And then as the day went on, these images just were spreading more and more. There are lots of claims and allegations from parents and the targets of these images that the school handled this really poorly. There's been lots of conflicting information from the police department saying they charged a teen for this, but then the school was saying there were no charges placed and that there was no incriminating evidence found. Obviously, it's very easy to delete things off your phone if you're a teenage boy. So there's been a lot of confusion about who is responsible, what happened. Obviously, I absolutely believe that the targets of this is not something that a teenage girl ever should have to go through and would make up and, you know, make up a story about. So I can't imagine going to school that day and being like, now I have to sit in class with the guys who are mocking me and talking about these images that made me.
And I think about that, Samantha. It's hard enough being, you know, in high school and having rumors swirling around about you. So, Amanda, you think about what rules are. Like, a lot of schools are sort of left flat-footed. A lot of states and legislatures left flat-footed, don't have a lot of rules around this. So what sort of, you know, what is sort of out there to help us get some idea of how to deal with this, especially when you're talking about minors?
It's a really important question, and we have to really look back before deepfakes to analog non-consensual intimate imagery to understand the legal landscape, because around 2014, 2015, some feminist legal scholars, Professor Danielle Citrin and Dr. Marianne Franks, published a law review article called Criminalizing Revenge Porn, which is kind of what the nomenclature used to be around that time. And even though it was an uphill battle, now all 50 states and U.S. territories have localized criminal laws for analog, non-consensual intimate imagery. And in the last 5 years or so, I believe 14 states have updated those laws or adopted new laws that are specifically tailored to deepfakes. But that's on the criminal side. And I think when you're talking about appropriating a flawed and biased criminal legal system for what is ostensibly a feminist goal, because some scholarship has suggested that about 90% of deepfakes overall are pornographic or sexualized. I shouldn't say pornographic because they're not consensual. They're sexualized. And of those, about 99% are of women and girls. So there's very much a gendered angle to what's being protected with these laws. But there are a number of other feminists who are skeptical of this co-option of the criminal legal system that's going to do good. And I think particularly when we're talking about minors harming minors, the prospect of a 14-year-old being a sex offender is a really hard pill to swallow, given what Samantha explained about how normalized these apps are. You know, you're not going on the deep web, you're paying with a credit card, and these ads are targeting you saying you don't need consent. And so I think there's a lot of conflicting messages that make it really tricky to navigate that criminal landscape. However, there are a number of civil laws in which plaintiffs could bring their own action against the abuser or the offender to potentially get some remuneration for what's definitely going to be resolving those reputational harms. It could be transferring schools, it could be going to therapy, it could be other kinds of medical bills. And we do a lot of work in the clinic around those civil laws, those civil alternatives. And two of the ones that I think are underexplored for a variety of reasons are defamation and a tort called false light, which is a privacy tort. Mm-hmm. And both of those may be successful, but we haven't seen a lot of action with those because so much emphasis has been placed on the criminal law. And then one other complicating piece for the sort of minor on minor harm is there are some Department of Justice lawyers who have brought prosecution or brought indictments against minors potentially alleging that these images are child sex abuse material when they're created. That definitely happened when it was about analog non-consensual intimate imagery. Unfortunately, sometimes the victim or the survivor was the target of that prosecution. But there is a possibility that synthetic child sex abuse material is illegal, and that is currently being parsed out in the courts. There is not uniform agreement across circuit courts about whether synthetic child sex abuse material, or CSAM as it's often called, is illegal. But it's something to keep an eye on.
Explain that. How could it not be illegal?
Well, it's very complicated, but to make it simple, there may be some First Amendment implications about whether there is the reason that child sex abuse material has been criminalized historically is because there's abuse to a real child. And I think that when you use a real face of a real child, there may be similar what are called haunting harms. In the context of other forms of CSAM, the haunting harm is this idea that no matter where the victim goes afterwards, they're never going to know who's seen their image. They're never going to know whether someone taking a long glance on the ice cream shop line has seen that image and that's why they're paying close attention, right? It haunts them. And we have not seen sort of the same embrace of the haunting harm carried over to synthetic child sex abuse material, but I think that the concept really does translate. And so navigating some of these tricky First Amendment issues, which I think are too much to get into here, just know that they exist. And courts are dealing with them in different ways, and they have gone in different directions. So eventually, this is probably something that will have to be resolved by a higher court, and that will be a really interesting interchange to see
Wait, so I
happen.
just want to make sure I understand the basics, though. It wouldn't be illegal because the image that's being produced and disseminated is not, quote unquote, a real person. It's based in the reality of a person, but it's a digitally altered image, which could be then protected by First Amendment speech rights.
Kind of, yes. I think that part of it is there's a hope by some that this would be sort of a de minimis First Amendment issue because there is a real child's image generating the
Right.
image, right? It's not fully synthetic, and fully synthetic images have been protected under the First Amendment under prior
So like a
jurisprudence.
pure cartoon, like I mean a drawing of not a real person, no matter how sexually explicit it is, that is protected.
That has been the historical jurisprudence, yeah. And so we're now in really tricky new territory, and I think courts are dealing with it in different ways, and we're going to have to see what happens.
And K Hag on YouTube says AI is just a tool generating artwork, images, stories, text using other tools like paintbrushes or pencil are protected by the First Amendment. Using AI isn't the issue, it's what you do with it. If you're sexually harassing someone, you're already breaking the law. Using AI to do it or not doesn't make it any more or less illegal. That's K Hag on YouTube. Again, our question of the day is who should be held accountable for AI sexual harassment? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And our YouTubers and Facebookers, keep those comments coming. Samantha, I'd like to, I mean, we talked about the Ratner case, but that situation is not unique. This is happening in school districts and in communities all across the country. Could you give us another example?
Sure. So again, I'm not super familiar with this case either because I haven't been following it as closely as the Radnor one. But there was a case in Lancaster County where there were, let's see, 58 girls. Just looking up the story right now. 58 girls had been targeted by 347 AI-generated nude images of these girls. It's extremely rampant. In that case, students came forward and talked to Lancaster Online about this issue. And it's not, I mean, we're talking about Pennsylvania, but it's all over the country as this is happening. And I think a big issue that we're seeing is the adults in the room are just not prepared. They're not ready for this. They don't know how to handle it. They, in some cases, don't believe the targets. They say, oh, it's just a picture, get over it. Which is cruel, and you know, it's a terrible response to especially to a child, but to anyone.
And what is
And
sort
yeah,
of
as Amanda's talking
the
about the harms
impact
to
of
this.
these in your coverage as a journalist, you've seen this. What has sort of been the impact when, because you know, for people who say it's just an image, it's a fake image, you know that's not you, but there is a ripple effect. There is an impact on the people who are the subject of this type of harassment.
Yeah, I mean that's something that even people who are targeted by deepfakes say that they thought before they were targeted. So I think once you have seen and have had those images of yourself spread online, you don't really understand, and it's hard to internalize how violating this is. And if it was just isolated to like someone in person showed you a picture of yourself having sex that was not real, you'd be like, okay, that's weird and gross, but you know, that's where the harm would stop. But when we're talking about the internet, these images spread like wildfire when they're made of individual people who are just like everyday non-celebrities. It's extremely harmful because then when you're Googling their name, sometimes these images will come up if it's a harassment tactic to get them to get back at them for some kind of vindictive reason. People will attach their real name to these images and say, here's so and so on a porn site, and you know, attach the actual the deepfake images. Then you know, your landlord, your employer, your babysitter, you know, it's just people Google your name and say, oh, this person's on this porn site having sex. I don't want to do business or hire or rent to this person because there's this whole stigma against sex workers, which we can get into. But it's something that people don't realize is an extreme reputational harm when it's happening to everyday people and to celebrities also. They don't deserve this happening to them either. They're targeted every day by malicious, you know, rumors and things like that. So they don't deserve to have this escalation of harassment to them either. But since we're talking about just normal students, normal women, it's incredibly harmful. And it's something that lots of people in your life may have seen also. So once you're aware of the images, because someone said, hey, I think you were hacked, or like your images are out there. I think this tape leaked of you. They then the victims then realize, oh my God, everyone's seen this image. People think it's real. They think I did this. It's already so out of control at that point, which is a really scary feeling.
We're asking you today, who do you think should be held responsible for AI sexual harassment? Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. We have a caller on the line. This is Andrea from Philadelphia. Hey, Andrea, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thanks. I think that it should be at the AI company level. I think it's really similar to gun control or gun legislation, where, you know, if kids have access to something like this, they're just kids and they're going to do whatever they can. I think, you know, the real question is, you know, why is this even possible with AI? It's because the companies can make more money. And we just saw with Anthropic kind of refusing to bend to Department of Defense, you know, asks of them to loosen their morals. And they said, that's fine, you can cut the contract, we can swallow the, you know, $10 to $100 million. So I think the companies really need to stand up and cut their losses and just make it impossible to create this kind of stuff because it's so dangerous.
Thanks, Andrea. Amanda, let me ask you a question based on that call. So we've sort of taken it for granted in the beginning of this conversation that you can query the app or whatever the platform is and say, create this image for me. Why haven't the tech companies made it so those queries don't work or just kind of get errors returned? Do they have the capability of doing that as far as we know? We have about a minute before the break here.
Yeah, I think that some companies have been more mindful about trying to put in guardrails, but some are really relishing in the lack of guardrails and making that what distinguishes their product in the market. And I think that as long as users are demanding this kind of accessibility, I'll say, a number of technology companies are going to acquiesce and make it available, even though it's not necessarily in the best interests of the people targeted or their families or maybe even society.
So we're coming up on a break, but maybe on the other side of this break, we'll get into like what regulations or laws could look like that could rein in some of these actors in the tech space that, as you say, Amanda, are kind of using this as an opportunity to remove guardrails because there's a market advantage to it.
Yeah, and I want to know what we could do if someone, you know, finds a deep fake of them or someone they love, what steps do they take to get it taken down and sort of protect themselves? So we have a lot of questions for on the other side of this break.
Sure, and keep your questions coming, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. This hour, we are talking about AI and non-consensual sexual imagery. Rapid advancements in tech have opened the door to all sorts of abuse, and we're unpacking how society, tech companies, and government need to adapt to meet the moment. Our guests are Amanda Lewandowski-Tepsky, a law professor and founding director of the Intellectual Property and Information Policy Clinic at Georgetown University, and Samantha Cole, journalist and co-founder at 404 Media.
And we're asking you this hour, who should be held accountable for AI sexual harassment? Email studio2@whyy.org. You can call 888-477-9499 if you're streaming on YouTube or Facebook. Drop a comment in the chat. Ackerman Philly on YouTube, one of our regulars, says, I think the blame ultimately lies with the company. The child is the proximate actor, but the company made it possible. It collapsed the skill barrier, the cost barrier, and the shame barrier all at once.
Yeah. And so I want to pick up from where we left off on the other side of the break, Amanda, and just sort of walk us through. I mean, if you're a person, because usually when this type of thing happens, you don't necessarily find the deepfake. Someone tells you about it. But you find out that there's a deepfake image of you, a sexualized image of you with that you did not consent to. What are some of the things you can do to sort of protect yourself and sort of, you know, what is the step one? Where do you start, Amanda?
Find out where that image is. If you can get a link, if it's being shared on a social media website or being distributed through email, try to find a link, because one of the first things you can do is most reputable platforms. I'm talking about a lot of social media places that don't necessarily have the generative AI tools that are part of the problem. They have platform policies that are not always specific to non-consensual intimate imagery, although occasionally, yes, but they have policies against nudity. They have policies against impersonation. They have policies against harassment. So if you can find a hyperlink to where the abusive image is being hosted, you can start making those kinds of requests. And one of the most important requests to make is a de-indexing request to Google. It won't necessarily remove the image, but it will make sure that that image does not come up in Google search. And the reason this comes up is because, as Samantha mentioned, it's not just the image that exists. It's usually with someone's name, sometimes their school, sometimes their job, if it's an adult, maybe even if it's not an adult, to make it easier to find. So de-indexing can be a way to kind of limit its spread through that particular medium.
Are sites obligated to take down your image if you ask? Do they have to do it?
It depends on the site and it depends on why you're asking. But in a lot of these cases, they will honor eventually platform policy to remove or de-index the image.
Several comments, like from Better Integra on YouTube and Judy Bennett, talking about how the AI companies, the platforms, are ultimately responsible and a key cog in all this. So you mentioned before the break, Amanda, that there are clearly, let's say, bad actors in the space who are looking at some of the opportunity created by some of the more mainstream AI companies not engaging this in this type of behavior. And they're saying, this is our opportunity. This is our market. So could you create a law that instructs anyone who makes their app available through the Apple App Store or Google Play to like outlaw certain types of requests from users? I'm just trying to understand how even this would work as a matter of law or regulation.
And again, I think this is a place where a lot of scholars think the First Amendment is going to make that kind of jurisprudence tricky. We just enacted a law last session called the Take It Down Act, which provides both civil and criminal liability for both analog non-consensual intimate imagery and deepfake images at the federal level. It was co-sponsored by Senator Ted Cruz and signed into law by President Donald Trump. And we haven't seen what exactly that law is going to do, But even organizations that were very pro-criminalization at the state level, I'm thinking of the Cyber Civil Rights Initiative, which was co-founded by the two scholars I mentioned earlier, as well as a number of tech policy organizations like the Center for Democracy and Technology, as well as other leaders in the space, have critiqued that law for saying that it's overbroad and vague and potentially unconstitutional.
What would be the downside of that law potentially? Like, who gets caught up in the dragnet of that? Mm-hmm. If indeed it's like upheld constitutionally, and whose rights would be infringed?
It really depends on what that looks like in practice, sort of as applied. Oops. That's a great question coming in.
It would look like can't get away from technology so, these days. Yeah,
I know you can't get away. It's always with us. But one thing I would say is maybe we're asking the wrong question about legal remedies, because whether we're talking civil or criminal, civil obviously costs money. Criminal has implications for every party in a very different way. Mm-hmm. But those are all after the fact. The right. harm has already been done. The person, going back to my previous point about haunting harm, has already been haunted and will be haunted.
Well, I guess the preventative remedy here is that you make it so that you tell the platforms before anything can be created, this type of request from a user. Again, I'm not a tech person. I don't know how you would do this, but this category of request gets categorically denied by the platform. It's just like there are certain apps now that are more popular where like you try to create like an AI video of a politician and will say that's a public figure. I won't do it.
Yeah.
And I guess the question is, could you codify that so that every single platform would have to have those types of guardrails? And you're saying probably not, because the First Amendment?
Probably not. You probably can't make them engage in that kind of speech. But I think that we are also looking to technology companies to be good actors in a way that I think misaligns with our observations and expectations as a public. And I wonder a lot of the time, and one thing that the clinic is thinking about is, can we intervene in a different way that addresses these issues? And one of the things we're thinking about really seriously is, what about talking directly to students in schools, explaining what laws these kinds of things may be violating, but more importantly, teaching them about consent, respect, and autonomy, and making that part of a curricular conversation that isn't just coming after a crisis in a school district where that's now top of mind, but really reaching them at a much earlier time to inform them, not only may you be engaging in illegal behavior that could be a sex offense, that could kind of change the entire trajectory of your life. Just respect other people in the way that you'd want them to respect you. And we haven't really seen a mainstream, large-scale effort at that kind of intervention.
Yeah.
And to me, I mean, I'm a lawyer. I also think that law is potentially a fantastic intervention for remedying harms.
But there has to be other ways.
There has to be. It's a remedy. It's not a prevention.
And
what I would really like to see is just never having this harm happen at all. If the tech companies can choose to do that, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But we can't depend on them.
Amanda, I'm gonna bring in a caller who can kind of piggyback on some of what you're saying. Paige from Philadelphia is on the line. Paige, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, I'm a longtime listener, obviously. So I think that the tech companies absolutely are responsible for this, but I don't think they'll ever be held accountable. I think they're just too big. I am the mom of a very young boy, and we are already having conversations about consent. This is my body. It's for me. This is your body. It's for you. You don't have to hug that family member if you don't want to, because I think, like, every mom needs to talk to not just their kids or every parent, but their boys, right? Because we just heard it's like 99% of these images are of girls and young women. So you have to talk to your boys, because it's not your son, like, until it is. Okay, it's not an angel. You got to talk to your son.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's Paige from Philadelphia.
That's someone who really knows the tenor of our show.
I love that. And Chris in Huntington Valley in Pennsylvania says, this isn't about porn specifically. I just learned of a third grade boy who was charging classmates $20 to show them how to get around the firewalls on the school Chromebooks to get apps that were forbidden. Of course, pornography could be among those apps. That's Chris. And so, you know, Samantha, we are talking about how this is happening in schools and in communities across the country. Are these conversations starting to happen? Because we talked about you know, Radner, everybody's sort of left flat-footed. What kind of rules have you seen being created, not just in Pennsylvania, but across the country to sort of help get ahead of this? And like Amanda said, not come in after the fact, but to talk about prevention.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. I think, and also what the caller or the emailer said just now about talking to your boys is so important. I mean, what's happening is not much, you know, it's not great. I think it's going to take so much of this harm happening again and again and again for police departments to get a clue. Cops don't know what to do with this because they're just like, this isn't something we understand. So it's going to take reporting this constantly. So that means it's going to have to keep happening. And that's really sad. And it shouldn't be that way. And I think addressing it long before it even hits that point is important. I would much rather see, instead of lobbying and efforts and money being poured into things like invasive age verification laws, and even the laws that are putting a Band-Aid over these like civil and criminal remedies for deepfakes after they happen, to see some lobbying for comprehensive and age-appropriate sex ed in schools. We don't have that right now. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't get any sex ed in school other than like, you know, the extreme basics and some terrible pictures of STDs. So it's like, we need to have these conversations about consent and appropriateness at that age level. It's not like we're talking about porn to a third grader. We're talking about, you know, like that parent said, it's your body, it's their body. This is what's okay with me and this is what's not okay. That's so important just in the scale of AI generated images and understanding that. And also just, preventing victimization of especially girls, and it happens to boys too, where, you know, sex ed is that armor against being another victim of these horrible crimes.
And quick follow-up to you, Samantha, is there a way, are you seeing sort of folks sort of even pushing these tech companies? Are there any tech companies that stand out by saying that we will not allow this, we do not want this? And is anybody sort of taking a stand?
I mean, like we just talked about, it's all about the money, right? So if it makes a company money, they're going to push it to the absolute limit. The limit is right now, this is in a lot of places considered child sexual abuse material. This is child porn, which is the term that we used to use. We don't anymore because it's not pornography. It's not consent. But it's federally illegal content in the U.S. to have these images on your device. And the platforms don't want to be liable for that, and they don't want to touch it, and they don't want to let you make it. So it's like ChatGPT, some of these others that like the image generators will hit a block where they'll say, I'm not going to do that. That's creating something that my guardrails have said I can't do. But these apps are running on different sorts of algorithms and they don't have as many guardrails where you can still make that kind of content on those apps. And they're doing it from other countries, so the US law doesn't matter. It's such a tricky problem to maneuver around, but there are companies that are saying, we don't want to be liable because that costs us money. It's all about the profit of it all.
Line.
So,
yeah.
Alicia says parents and schools must work together to introduce digital literacy. Too many adults claim they don't know what kids are doing online, but they keep allowing access to kids. Just like swim instruction and sex ed, we need quality digital literacy before letting young people get online. Is there any risk to that, though, Amanda? Because, you know, I remember some drug education, some kids walked away saying, cool, these are the drugs that are available now, and now I'm going to ask about where to get them. So, and with stuff like this that is still somewhat taboo, right, and somewhat in the shadows, is there any risk to educating kids? Or I guess, how do you think we do it the best way without furthering the risk?
I think we've seen the risks of not doing it. And I think we can agree that they're not great results. So why not try something that has been tried and true and empirically proven in other contexts to be effective? And I also think, to sort of align with Samantha's comment and our additional callers and emailers, it's not just important for moms to talk to their boys. It's important for all parents to talk to all of their kids. I think one of the messages that is so harmful about deepfakes that Samantha alluded to earlier is the sex phobia of women's bodies. And if you can find ways to make your daughter feel that her body is not something she needs to be ashamed of, you're still going to have awful effects from her being the target of a deepfake that are going to require years, maybe a lifelong process of grieving, mourning, and recovery. But if we can take away some of that stigma from just nudity and sexuality for girls, that is also a really powerful inoculation from some of these images. And that's something that I would want to see as part of that curriculum of consent, is saying bodies aren't bad. They are beautiful and they can do so many things. And the other piece that I think we have not talked about is parents talking to parents. If the reputational harm is someone getting fired or not hired or ostracized from their school, we need to be talking to people in power making those decisions. We need to be talking to HR. We need to be talking to principals. We need to be talking to college admissions officers. This is the worst thing, hopefully, that will ever happen to someone in their life. And I say that because obviously worse things are out there, but hopefully this is the worst thing that happens to them.
Yeah.
If we can also get it sort of normalized that the person to be ostracized is the abuser, not the target, mm-hmm. that's a conversation parents can be having on the playground with other parents, and they don't have to wait for permission from a sex education curriculum to start doing that work and destigmatizing the harm to their daughters.
That is Amanda Lewandowski-Tepsky, who is a law professor and founding director of the Intellectual Property and Information Policy Clinic at Georgetown University. Amanda, thanks for your time today on Studio 2.
Awesome. Thank you.
Let me also thank Samantha Cole, journalist and co-founder of 404 Media. Samantha, thanks for your perspectives.
Thanks for the great convo.
And sorry, Ross from Glenside, on one of our callers, we couldn't get to you. Hopefully you'll call in again another day and we will get to you. Frank says, I think the blame is on society. Start teaching young people respect. Our show, of course, is produced by Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel Mae Bryan. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. We'll talk to you tomorrow.